This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider, in which we will break down every COVID-related thought that Kirk Cousins has ever had with Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus. What's going on, Sam?
Finally, my expertise comes to the fore.
Well, I'll say this, and this is all I really want to say about it, because I'm not an epidemiologist either, and I don't know a whole lot about how Kirk Cousins' line of logic exactly works after even talking to him as a follow-up to his Kyle Brandt interview, because I just couldn't quite put together the pieces of what he was trying to say. But he wears a mask, even though he's not that personally afraid of COVID. So you all should do the same. There you go. If you're not that afraid of COVID, wear a mask anyway, because it might impact someone else. That's what Cousins said. And that's all I got for you, other than not being surprised at all that Cousins would say something that could be misconstrued, because this happens all the time. Last year, he broke down his rookie center's butt sweat for the media. Like, that's something you do in the locker room, not in front of the entire media, because you know it's going to end up on ESPN, or at least most people do, not Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, the two silver linings, I guess, are one, at least he was saying at the end of it all, I still wear a mask because, you know, other people aren't as cavalier about it as I am. So fair play, right? If you're going to have that kind of opinion, at least recognize that it isn't all about you, which he did. The second silver lining is that Kirk Cousins basically used the same line as Ivan Drago did. And that's probably the only two times, or the only time, those two guys are ever going to be comparable in their entire lives. So it was worth it just to be able to be compared to Ivan Drago at any point in your life. That's worth doing.
You know, that's a great point. And with Cousins, he has always struggled with this. I think he always will struggle with this, of how he phrases things, how he answers questions. And sometimes I think that his mouth works a little bit faster than his brain. And I found this even with press conferences that he's done with us, post-game press conferences. And I think it's just part of who he is that he struggles with this. And there are other people, you know, Aaron Rodgers did a 2-hour interview the same way with Kyle Brandt, and Rodgers just handles those types of things so well and so calmly and just eases his way through them. And he'll make some headlines, but it won't even really matter. And with Cousins, I think part of it too is his reputation, that everyone sees him as a little bit aloof and things like that. So it just kind of confirms what they already think of Cousins, and then it blows up. So at the end of the day, he's wearing a mask, he's going through the protocols, and he's going to try to stay on the field. I shrug my shoulders at the rest. Now, the reason that you are on is because you wrote about Cousins, and you guys did a great preview on your podcast, Sam, about the NFC North, in which you said the Bears are obviously winning because they have the best quarterback situation. I'm just kidding. But you leaving the door open for that was questionable, Sam, for the Chicago Bears to win the division.
Yeah, and I was just listening to our colleagues on the forecast there, Eric and George, and you know, they kind of made a similar point, which is if you put Matthew Stafford on the Bears, they would be by far the favorites for the division. You know, their problem has been quarterback. And I think, look, I'm not sold that Nick Foles is a dramatic upgrade over Trubisky, but I think the difference between the two of them is that you're probably going to get good Nick Foles for a stretch, right? The baseline might not be much different, but good Nick Foles is incredible. Bad Nick Foles is abysmal, but you're already getting abysmal with Mitch Trubisky, so you might as well shoot for the upside and hope that you can ride the good Nick Foles for a period. And then the other thing I think that's worth noting about Foles is that look, he's all over the map in terms of what you're going to get out of him on a week-to-week performance, but he does have a pretty consistent track record of excelling within quarterback-friendly systems, right? So systems that have a track record of making life easier for their quarterbacks and generally making them look better than they are, Foles seems to be particularly susceptible to being manipulated by those offenses. And I think fundamentally, the Chicago Bears offense with Matt Nagy is that offense. Like, they've had to dumb it down to try and rescue Trubisky, and it hasn't worked. In fact, if anything, I think it's compounded the problems and just meant that not only do you now have a bad quarterback, but you have a bad system backing him up. But I think the basis of that system is still sound and could theoretically make Foles look a lot better than we traditionally expect him to look. So, yeah, I think if the Bears dramatically take a step forward at quarterback, they're going to be way better than we're anticipating them being because the roster is pretty good.
Yeah, and how many teams in Bears history have come short of their talent for the whole roster just because they had some schmuck at quarterback? I was just watching the other day one of the mid-90s NFL films recaps in which Dave Craig and Eric Kramer split the snaps. I mean, just think about like where you're at with old Dave Craig and Eric Kramer, and they had a bunch of other good players like Curtis Conway was good, a bunch of good guys on defense as they always have, and they went 7-9, and that's kind of where I would expect them. But I wanted to compare and contrast Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, and Matt Stafford with you, Sam, because I love the question, which one of these three guys would you take for the next 5 years? Maybe we could start there. Stafford, Rodgers, or Cousins?
So I've written about each one of these guys relatively recently, and I've kind of been thinking more deeply about what they are as quarterbacks because of that. And I think it's kind of fascinating because, so Matthew Stafford, I think everyone's really high on him right now because the last thing we saw from him was phenomenal, right? But last year, I think what we saw from him was unsustainable in terms of what we're going to see in 2020 and beyond. He had, for half a season, he had basically the highest average depth to target. If he'd sustained that for a whole season, it would be the highest figure we've ever seen at PFF, right? So that's going to come down. But the other thing is, not only was it incredibly high, but he was insanely productive while he was doing that. It was like that 2015 Carson Palmer season in Arizona, where again, he was right up there in terms of average depth of target, and for some reason was just absurdly efficient doing that at the intermediate level. Like, I don't know that we've ever seen that before. And Stafford was at that kind of level before he got hurt and got put on the shelf. So I don't think that either of those two things will end up in the same area as they were going forward. So you sort of have to temper your expectation with Stafford a bit more to what you're used to seeing. With Rodgers, the question is, well, look, Rodgers at his best is a transcendent Patrick Mahomes type of talent. That's how he was being talked about back in 2010, 11, 2014 even. But I think everyone accepts that guy isn't there anymore. But what is there? What can you get out of the current Aaron Rodgers? And why has he declined to the level he is? Because the physical tools are all still kind of there. Like, he can still move around, his arm is still insane. Like, why is he not that guy anymore? I think, honestly, the reason he's just sort of developed some bad habits and got in a rut. And, you know, if you've been doing the same bad habit for 5 years, it's hard to just snap out of that and change. And the bad habits that he has were always a sort of element of his game. They were just, it didn't matter when he was playing as well as he was, right? He always had a tendency to take more sacks and offset interceptions with sacks and take some sort of hidden negative plays between sacks and throwaways. But when you were playing as well as he was at his best, like, it didn't matter. It was just a feature of his play. But now you know that there's some missing meat on the bone. So now maybe it's an issue, right? It's, well, okay, we're trying to find this missing percentage of play from Rodgers. Well, here's a percentage we could get, right? It's those negative plays that he was making before. So I think really we're still left wondering with Rodgers how far back towards his old self can he get and how much is his fault. And then Cousins, the conversation's really interesting because I've been sort of pondering the term intangibles recently, right? And intangibles, I think in my head, was this term that you know, old football guys like the Moneyball movie, the scouts who were talking about bad face and that kind of thing. It's a term that they would use, right? And it's a cop-out term for something that you can't really figure out how to measure. And I think there's some truth in that, but I think what it is that it's possible to measure it. It's just you need to dive deeper and find the ways in which it manifests. And between doing our Joe Montana versus Steve Young podcast and then diving into Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr as well, you watch Derek Carr and you watch Kirk Cousins, and it's clear there's just something missing, right? There's something between them and being great quarterbacks. Even when, like, if you toss out week two, the Green Bay game last year, Kirk Cousins, I think, was our number one graded quarterback in the NFL. Like, he was playing as well as anybody for almost all of the season. But again, overall, when you look at him play, everyone knows. You still know there's something not there that is there with a Patrick Mahomes or a Russell Wilson or whatever it is. And when I started to dive into the numbers, you know, I don't have a clear grasp of what it is. But what I can tell you is that Kirk Cousins, from a clean pocket when the situation is good and he's not under pressure, is probably as good as any quarterback in the NFL putting the ball where it needs to go. But the more disadvantageous you make the situation for him, the worse he plays. So whether it's the fourth quarter where the pressure is building, whether it's third downs, whether it's play under pressure, whether, you know, any of these things where it's a harder thing for the quarterback to play, he gets progressively worse step by step. And, you know, part of this, the stuff you were talking about, it's not inconsequential. This idea that he might be a phenomenal X's and O's brain. And you remember, I don't know if you saw this, but he did like an online only, I think, TV series with quarterback prospects. And he was sort of walking these guys through X's and O's. And I was incredibly impressed by the processing that he had and the grasp of plays. And, you know, he asked, Kurt Benkert maybe was the guy. And he asked this guy, what's your favorite play in college? And he draws it up on the whiteboard and he goes, yeah, you see, that's what we call. And he named it in like two or three different offenses in the NFL. That's what they call it in Washington. Then in Minnesota, we call it this. And then he starts coaching him through, like, you know, in the college, you're just viewing this guy. But in the NFL, you have to look two guys further down the line because that's what's going to determine who's breaking on that football. So from an X's and O's standpoint, he's as good as anybody. But again, there's something missing, right? And I think there's a few different ways of mentally processing things. There's that football intelligence, but there's also something that I've never really understood how to articulate it, but it's being able to just react really quickly without, when things go against you, without having to think about it, make the right decision all the time. And I relate it to soccer a lot, that there's guys that they always have time, you know, particularly in the middle of the field where guys are coming and pressuring them. There are certain guys where it just doesn't make any difference. They just know how to turn away from you, how to make a little subtle movement, and they're never really under pressure. And there's other guys where when you pressure them, they go to hell, and they panic, and they make bad decisions, and it all goes south. I think quarterback play involves a lot of whatever that type of brain is. And I think one of the biggest sort of missing, or one of the most difficult things to evaluate in quarterback play is that. It's very hard to quantify that. And it's why, you know, they've tried with the Wonderlic, they try and get them up on the whiteboard. They try all these things to try and sort of simulate that thought process in quarterbacks. But ultimately, I don't know if you're ever able to figure it out until you throw them out on a field for 1,000 snaps and see how it pans out.
Want to remind you to go to SodaStick.com to get your original Minnesota sports-inspired goods. They just launched their official collaboration with Bud Grant. Yes, Bud Grant. You can now get your official Bud Grant shirt and Man Cave art print. If you haven't seen it yet, you have to check it out. And we're going to hook you up with free shipping for your order. Use code PURPLEINSIDER for free shipping. That is SodaStick, SOTASTICK.com. Original Minnesota sports inspired goods. Code PURPLEINSIDER for free shipping.
You know, I'll put it this way. It's kind of like students in school where you have the one student who does all the homework and works extremely hard and ends up with straight A's. That's Kirk Cousins. And then your other student can't really stick with the structure of school very well, but you put them in an art class and then they draw something brilliantly. Like, I think there are different types of brains that people have. Now, maybe Patrick Mahomes is like the perfect, and that's right. When you have Joe Montana, Patrick yeah. Mahomes, Steve Young, is when those two things come together. But I think Kirk is missing creativity in his game. And so we do equate it to other things, and he's certainly not the best leader I've ever been around, but you know, that's probably overstated in some ways. I think it really comes down to, do you have that creativity in you? Do you have the athleticism to be creative? That's another part of it too, because I don't think that he generally does. If you're talking about like basketball players, there's some basketball players who on the fly can just, you know, the no-look pass or do a dribble move that you've never seen before, or bend so close to the ground to dribble by somebody where you're mind blown. And a lot of that is creativity and athleticism coming together. I think he's short on that. He is very high on footwork detail, X's and O's. But the other part of it too is when the other team throws him a coverage that he didn't expect, and this happened in New England in 2018, he got this coverage from Belichick where he's like, what do I do here? Everyone's walking around before the play. They're daring us to run, and I don't know where the coverage is going. You saw him kind of seize up a little bit. And so I think that with the difference between Stafford, Rodgers, and Cousins is the other two have an answer when the other team does what hurts them, but yeah. Cousins does not have an answer.
So that's the thing is, I get what you're saying about creativity, but I think there's another element to it as well. It's not just the ability to improvise and to get creative and to do something outside of the box. It's the ability to do it quickly on the fly when what you thought was going to happen is not happening, or when suddenly there's a new variable that you weren't prepared for. I think one of the reasons that I'm kind of aware, or I think about this more than a lot of people, is I know for a fact I'm in the Kirk Cousins side of that bracket, right? From my very limited, modest sporting history, I know full well that when things unfold the way I was expecting them to in my brain, I'm five times better than they did when suddenly stuff goes, something, a curveball is thrown at you and you have to adjust what you were expecting to happen on the fly. I know I'm bad at that. But if I don't have to go to that, I'm a hell of a lot better. And I've seen people where the reverse is true, right? There are people that I know when they get put in those pressure situations, you can't even notice. It doesn't faze them at all. But I think that's the thing that Cousins is missing. It's really hard to identify where that shows up in numbers and in situations and in statistics and all these kinds of things. But I think that's what we see when we look at the film and you go, there's just something missing for this guy. There's a reason, like even if his PFF grade ranks him in the top five over a full 16-game slate, we all know that that's not the guy you want in the Super Bowl in the fourth quarter when the pressure's on. And I think that's what it is that we're seeing. Whereas with Rodgers, we've seen in the past, he does have that. With Stafford, I think he has it as well. It's maybe a little bit less consistent. But then I think Stafford in general is a little bit less consistent. But definitely those two guys certainly have that.
Well, I wanted to ask you about Stafford because we've talked on this show a lot about Aaron Rodgers because he is interesting and the biggest nemesis of the franchise for a long time. Stafford, I think that people just all kind of agree like, yeah, he's good, but he does have, maybe analytics will hate this, but he does have a below 500 record during his career. He has done less winning in the playoffs than Kirk Cousins, but he sort of has more of a perception of a guy that should be a winner, I think, when people talk about him. And I wonder what you think that gap is. Like, is it entirely the Lions organization? Because I could be sold on that. I mean, they are right down at the bottom with Jacksonville, Washington team name here. And, I don't know, like the Jets, I mean, they are among the bottom franchises, but I wonder how many years of that same excuse we can give to Matt Stafford without acknowledging there are holes in the guy's game.
Yeah, I don't think you can put it all down to the Lions, but I think it's definitely worth making the point that, hey, it's the Lions. You know, there's a reason that they are one of the butts of the joke franchises. You know, you articulated them, the Browns, the Lions, these are the teams that people joke about, and that's for a reason. So Stafford has been working against that for most of his career. On the other hand, when you look at the tools that he has, right, if you were building a quarterback prospect in a lab, you know, Stafford would be right up there in terms of all the things you're looking for. A cannon for an arm, he's mobile enough to get, you know, things done when it breaks down. He's got everything you want. But for some reason, he's never been able to put it all together and be the player that people expect him to be. And I think because you see flashes of it so consistently, it's easy for people to think that that's what he always is, you know? So when we see really good Matthew Stafford, and that's part of the other thing, is he's always had those games where he does put it all together, and it's like, wow, this guy's amazing. If you catch enough of those, you could easily be convinced that Matthew Stafford is a lot better than he is. But he's never been able to weed out that inconsistency from his game. It's just, it leaves me anyway frustrated, because you look at him and you say, why are you not able to do this every week? Because it's not like you only get those games against the worst teams in the NFL. You know, there's no rhyme or reason as to which teams he decides to show up for and look like the player that we think he can be. But it just doesn't happen week in, week out. And so you're left with this idea of, you know, perpetually, that this guy should be better than he is. He should be a top five quarterback, and he can be, and we see stretches of it, but it just never lasts. And that's kind of why, you know, there's a lot of people, the forecast guys are there in terms of the Lions are a really good value bet for the NFC North this year, because Stafford was playing so well and there's enough around him that if he does pick up in 2020 the way he left off in 2019, the Lions are going to be hard to beat. And you're like, yeah, but like, I've been bitten so many times by this, expecting Stafford to continue, and it always regresses back into something less than what you're thinking. So I'm until I see it, I'm always going to take the default of, yeah, I mean, it does rely on Stafford doing that, and therefore it's probably not going
to
happen.
So I'm always trying to think of different ways to sort of categorize quarterbacks and then, you know, do a little mind experiment and see how it plays out. And one thing I was thinking about actually watching some basketball is certain players give you a chance to go so far and give you so like X percentage of games where they'll win for you. And I think that quarterbacks are kind of that way. Like Patrick Mahomes in a season will give you 14 games that you can win and only two that maybe he doesn't play that well. And even then you might still win, right? Whereas Cousins, he'll probably give you 10 shots to win that many games. And if everything else goes good, you play defense, you make your field goals, he doesn't get a fumble return for touchdown, you win 10. And I think of the same thing with Stafford. Is like, he probably gives you 10 or 11 chances to win, but his team is usually trash, so they get 7 or they get 8 or they get 6, right? And so a couple years he's given you 10 shots and they've gotten 10 wins and gone to the playoffs, but then there's usually on the other side a guy who gives you 13 shots or 14 shots that, you know, you're not going to match up that well against, or a great defense. And I've always felt that both of those guys, Cousins and Stafford, what's different from Rodgers is if you have a great defense, you can stop them. Whereas Rodgers, you might have a great defense and he'll beat you anyway.
Yeah. I mean, there's almost sort of two numbers to look at, right? There's how many games a season is the quarterback going to win on his own for you? Like, how many games is that guy capable of taking the team on his shoulders and balling out, and it almost doesn't matter what anybody else does, you're winning. And then the other question is, okay, and then how many games is he going to lose for you because he doesn't show up at all? Like, what is his baseline? How many games are you going to win just because he's your quarterback and he's going to play at a sufficiently high level that you're probably going to beat a lot of teams? So that's where I come. Like, I don't know that the answer to the first question for a guy like Gardner Minshew, right? I don't know that he has a single win in him in terms of being able to carry a team when all else has gone to hell around him. On the other hand, I think he might get you to like 5 or 6 just by having a baseline high enough that you're going to be in all those games. So like, his first number would be like 0, but his second number would be pretty high. And he almost is like a tank proof quarterback, because I don't think his baseline is low enough that you're going to lose enough games to get the number one overall pick. Cousins would be like, you know, a Minshew plus. His first number is probably not actually that high, but his second number I think is really high. Like, he's not going to be the reason that you lose like what, 12, 13, 14 games. Like, you're going to be in pretty much every game where Kirk Cousins is your quarterback. The question is going to be like, how many can he win when everything goes to hell around him? And I think you're talking about a low single digit figure for him.
And how good, I think of this too, how good would the team around you have to be in order for him to get to a Super Bowl is always a question too, because if you run into a team that's better, you're probably not going to win. And that's been the case really throughout his whole career. All right, so why don't you finish where we started, because you didn't exactly answer the question. Next 5 years, Rank them. Okay. And you know what? Yeah. Throw in Trubisky / Foles if you want to.
I'm not. Well, Trubisky is last because, like, you know, they're still playing this pretense that that's a quarterback competition. If it is, you might as well just pack up and go home this year because.
Oh, okay, let me add this then. Throw in Jordan Love to this. So rank them for the next 5 years and you get to throw in Jordan Love.
5 years. So I do think that we've reached this point of inevitable decline for Rodgers. We might see a bounce back 2020, but his arrow's on the way down. This might be a blip back up, but it's heading backwards. Now, his starting position was so high that even heading that backwards, he's pretty high, right? So, next 5 years, I honestly might lean Kirk Cousins number one, scary as that is. I think he might be the most dependent of all the quarterbacks in terms of supporting cast and situation. But I think if you give him those things, he might have the highest baseline and a reasonably high ceiling. So I think I would lean with Cousins. Stafford for 5 years. Let's lean with Rodgers over Stafford. I haven't seen enough in Jordan Love to believe that he's in the conversation to be in that discussion. I mean, he needs to A, last, and B, you know, get a shot to even be in the discussion. You're not going to, like, those three guys in 5 years' time are still going to be viable. We don't even know if Jordan Love is viable at any point in his NFL career yet.
I think I would go Rodgers first, even if I know the last 3 years might be awful, because he, if I gave him the right team, could give, you know, me a shot. And I don't think the Packers are any longer the right team for him. So
I mean, Rodgers this year, if I'm right in terms of this year is a bounce back for him and he shows like one last glimpse of why he was so special a few years ago, that on its own could be worth taking him number one, right? Like Rodgers this year could be the quarterback that drags you to a Super Bowl. And I don't think you're ever going to see that from Cousins or Stafford. Like Stafford at least has the potential that maybe he could put it all together 1 year. Cousins, I don't even think in an ideal scenario, you know, if everything aligns, just has that in him. I don't think he's going to be a quarterback ever that drags a team to a Super Bowl that it doesn't deserve to be there anyway.
And I don't think we're going to see, this is maybe a hot take, I'm not even sure we ever see Jordan Love start a game. I think he might turn into Brian Brohm part two for the Packers. So Sam Monson, always great. Your guys' podcast, you and Steve Palazzolo, terrific. And I highly advise people to go find your article on Kirk Cousins if you want a little excitement for the season or maybe to not read what he thinks about COVID. Those would be two things you could do.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a way to spend an afternoon discussing the Kirk Cousins COVID debacle.
Yeah, I'd prefer not. All right, Sam, great stuff. Follow him, you already know, on Twitter, PFF_Sam. And we'll do it again soon, man. This is great.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
Get back to the conversation in just a minute, but first, you've always counted on restaurants, and now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. You open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely at your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your local restaurants also are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees for your first order when you download the DoorDash app at the App Store and enter the code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Sundays are coming back in the NFL with NFLSundayTicket.tv. You can stream every live out-of-market NFL game and every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite team and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFLSundayTicket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE. One of my favorite people to bring on the show, and I'm so glad that we could finally do this, Peter Carline for the Daily Mail. in the Queen's country. What do you call it? What do you call England? What's some nicknames for England?
Land of Hope and Glory.
Really? Okay. Else? I don't know.
England's green and pleasant land. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the second biggest Vikings fan in England's pleasant green land.
Yeah.
Something
maybe,
like that.
Maybe. Some, yeah.
You're a top 10 at least. Well,
yeah, it's got to be. Got to be.
But I want to know your big picture thought here on the Vikings, Peter, because it's quite the change for this year. You go from a team that had all the same players year in and year out. You knew everybody's number and background information and everything that happened. And then all of a sudden, you kind of flip a switch and there's a lot of new faces. So I want to start there with what your take is on where we should have expectations for this year with so many new people in such a weird circumstance.
Well, we've got continuity at head coach and general manager. So Mike Zimmer, as we all know, has seen it all in his tenure as Vikings coach. He's had eye surgeries and Teddy Bridgewater's and all the rest of it. So this is just another kind of regular year for him in many kind of ways. I understand why, you know, they couldn't keep Stefon Diggs. He wanted to leave, and they seem to have, you know, replaced him. You're not going to replace Diggs, who is pretty much, you know, him and Thielen together were so good. Losing him is going to hurt, but the decision of perfectly understandable decision of Michael Pierce must have been a massive kick in the teeth to. Kicking teeth, perhaps the wrong phrase, a real body blow, because you've let Linval go, who, you know, is just he's great, wasn't he? He was just an incredible human being and such a fixture of the Vikings. And then you say, okay, we've got a ready replacement here, and then interior of the defensive line now. It's a bit of a problem there. You know, teams might be able to run against this lot because they've always seemed to be able to, you know. And then there's the revolving door of the offensive line as well, which it's, you know, for all the complications of the game and the nuances, it pretty much boils down to if you've got it's one in the trenches, isn't it? You need a good offensive line. You need a good defensive line, and they're my red flags with the Vikings. But the defensive line, you've thought, okay, you know, there's no Everson there as well. No, you're losing a massive personality. All right, he had his off year, but he came back for the first 12 games of the last year. He was brilliant. He's gone too. So, yeah, there are a lot of changes, and they're not ones that are going to seem to be easily solvable.
The offensive line, not easily solvable ever for the Minnesota Vikings, it seems. And that's kind of where I wanted to go with this, because, you know, I think it's fair to look at these holes and say, how is that going to work out? How's it going to play out if it's the left guard, if it's the nose tackle that's not the same? And there are these kind of percentage points that you lose by not having Michael Pierce, as much as the team wants to tell us Shamar Stephen is, you know, I don't know, a Pro Bowl talent, but he's not Michael Pierce. You paid Michael Pierce for a reason, and he was an impact player for the Baltimore Ravens. I would have suspected he would have been here, and now you're moving a guy, a position who was playing three technique last year, to the nose tackle in Shamar Stephen to play there. But, you know, if they give up a few more runs that go for 5 to 7 yards, I don't think that that's killing you. But if they get the same performance from the interior of the offensive line as they did last year, that's killing you. And my question for you is on Kirk Cousins, I mean, what's sort of your feeling on what's fair to expect from him when you haven't changed the fundamental thing that has gotten him his kryptonite, the interior of the offensive line, and you take away his best receiver? As much as I like some of the other players who are mixed in here, Alexander Hollins, Tajay Sharp, Chad Beebe, there's all things to like about each one of them, but you know, if you're expecting Justin Jefferson to be Stephon Diggs right away, that is probably setting the bar way too high. But I also think you extended Kirk Cousins because you thought you could keep winning with Kirk Cousins. So we shouldn't lower the bar for him and say, well, you know, they traded Diggs, so he can have a down year here.
Yeah. This time last year, he pretty much had everything he needed to function at his highest level. You know, Dalvin Cook, Diggs, and again, the Dalvin Cook thing, we'll come to that, I'm sure. Yeah, the offensive line, it's a worry because Cousins, he isn't the most mobile of fellows, is he? Particularly when they come at him straight through the middle. So, yeah, slight cause for concern, I'd say. I mean, you know, he's not a twinkle toes, I think. But he is playing tennis, I hear. Perhaps his forehands and his backhands will help him evade some pressure.
Probably not.
Probably not, no.
Probably not. I love the pained manner in which you talk about Kirk Cousins. It's one of my favorite things. It's like, well, you know, he can't really move and will frustrate you at times. I mean,
but he's capable of some really good things.
Yeah.
But it's a touch of the sublime to the ridiculous, isn't it? It seems he can do all the hard stuff. It's the basics that he just. And he's just so hittable. You want an elusive quarterback. He's not your guy, but he's capable of some great throws.
And I think that that's what makes him one of the most frustrating is that you know that at any given week he is capable, but you could also just have that Kirk coaster type of moment where it, you know, goes right back down and you get Chicago. And we know the teams that are going to beat the Vikings, like the types of teams who have those guys. And that's why you said, all right, why not get a bigger offensive lineman to start right away? Get someone on the free agent market or start Ezra Cleveland, but it doesn't look like he's going to start. And you're going to end up at least to start the season with just about the same level of offensive line, unless Garrett Bradbury takes a huge step forward, which, you know, I mean, should we expect him to be better? Yes, but probably not worlds better in terms of pass blocking.
And Riley Reiff defies old father time as well, which, you know, I'm not a gambling man, but I wouldn't be putting any money on that either. They were playing Cleveland at guard, weren't they? Left guard.
Correct. And still are, but with the third team in practice now, which kind of suggests he's not in the mix for a starting job.
And Elflein's at right guard.
Yes, which everyone's thrilled about.
Including him.
Yeah, my Twitter mentions and the comments on the website are not exactly glowing when it comes to him playing the right guard. Let's talk about the Dalvin Cook thing, though. You know, the longer this goes, the more you think there's a chance that he just plays into the season without a contract extension, which would be kind of shocking considering that the Vikings go out of their way to pay everyone that they like all the time. But I wonder, though, if things have changed a little bit with the way that they feel about this, because there isn't the desperation that they felt after 2017. We've got to keep all our players. We're going back to the Super Bowl. That's why we're going to go back to the NFC Championship. So we got to keep everybody, pay everybody. And I wonder if they just feel like this is a more of a transition year and they don't have to jump at the first type of contract that his side wants.
I was very surprised that in their 27 draft picks, they didn't pick a running back. Matt, you know, the first two are great. Boone, he's okay. And then you've got Abdullah. But, you know, there were a lot of decent running backs in that draft. And you could have had a really strong stable. And if Cook gets injured, which, you know, by the law of averages, he will this season, Matt's, yeah, great, play him more. But then what are you dealing with? You know, we're already looking at the offensive line, which was they were arguably better at run blocking than, you know, than the pass. But you know, if Cook anyway, yeah, if I mean it's all if and buts anyway, isn't it? If Cousins gets injured, they're screwed. But if you know, I don't know. I think that running backs have such a they're just cannon fodder, aren't they? I mean You get them, you pick them up, you chew them up, you use them. Is there any? He had a great year last year, but is he going to be motivated to do that again this year? And if he has that, you know, if he has that injury, which he always does, is he going to play through it? And it's such a tricky one when you have a player like that you know is so important to you, but also is going to take up so much of your cap.
Would you pay him?
My inclination would be no. But I would have drafted a running back, certainly, in the third or the fourth round, even the fifth. I mean, you know.
I do wonder if they thought that this would get taken care of. Like, if they were thinking, well, he's going to be our long-term guy. So, and drafting Alexander Mattison was a little bit of maybe he's the guy who, you know, not this year, but in 2019, you know, maybe he's the guy that takes over if there's any issues with Dalvin Cook. But it's a hard spot to be in when you look forward with the salary cap and think, okay, there is going to be some movement here. Maybe you cut Riley Reiff after next year, Ezra Cleveland starts at left tackle. More likely than not, that happens. And you can restructure deals and so forth. But now when you have a salary cap that's going down, you have more reason if you're the Vikings to say, is it really prudent? Like, do we have this cap space to throw around when there will be other deals, especially Danielle Hunter's, that I think that need to be readdressed by the team because he is vastly underpaid. So, and you know, cannon fodder is a great way to describe running backs. You just, you know, you bring him in 2-3 years. Chew all right, out. Get out of here, move him on.
Yeah.
And, I'm not even sure that that's the wrong approach, because teams that have paid running backs have had so many problems with doing it later down the road.
Yeah. And wouldn't you, because of that, it's like cornerbacks. You can never have enough of them, surely. Why would you not draft one? Why not get one on a rookie you know, it just, anyway, perhaps I'm too critical, but you know, it seems like a no brainer to pick up a guy that, you know, you can use like Madison last year, or a little less than Madison, and because they're always going to get injured, aren't they? Your pawns.
Yep, almost every single time. But you know, maybe they like Mike Boone. He's been in the system a couple of years. I don't know what to make of Mike Boone. It's funny when you look at his Football Reference and he averaged over 5 yards a carry. Like, when was that? Week 17 is kind of what it was against the Chicago team that had just kind of and had enough. I wonder what you think about that, about the NFC North, because I love talking about the division. Detroit is a fascinating team because their coach is bad, but their players are good, and their offense was really good last year at the beginning of the season, and then they add a bunch of talent on the defensive side. They have all the earmarks of a team that takes a big jump, but yet it's just the Detroit Lions, and I have a really tough time. You know, it would be almost like someone sent me a weather analogy. If it was, you know, sunny 50 days in a row, you would guess the 51st, it wouldn't rain, right? I mean, it's possible that it does, but, you know, if you're the Detroit Lions and you're terrible for years and years and years and years, and you have a schmuck coach, like, am I supposed to believe that all of a sudden you flip on the switch and they're a 10-6, 11-5 team? That's really hard for me.
Yeah, and the Bears, the way that they fell off a cliff last year, all right, they lost Hicks, but that Nagy didn't exactly cover himself with glory for a lot of last season. I know that he's sort of he's got their hex over Zimmer, and they'll probably beat the Vikings twice again this year, because that's just what they seem to do. But then you got Green Bay with their interesting quarterback situation and their lack of receivers, but their pretty strong defensive front, which. You know, well, certainly when you line them up against the Vikings offensive line, you know, that could be a painful opener.
Yeah. And without fans in the stands to impact
without
the game
fans
in any way.
Yeah.
What did you think of, because we haven't caught up and talked football in such a long time. What did you think of what the Packers did in the draft and whether they can be a really good team again? They're not going to be 13-3, but whether they can win the division again.
They can, but. Because they've got Rodgers, you know, the probably, you know, head and shoulders, is that fair? The best quarterback in that division. I really like Stafford. He's so tough, Stafford. But
I think Rodgers used to be, but has come back to the pack.
He's coming back down, but he's still.
If you had a game where you had to win $1 million and you could only pick one of the NFC North quarterbacks to win,
it's Rodgers, isn't it?
There's no question who you pick to win the game. Yeah.
Yeah. And he can't do it forever. A very strange decision. I think their whole draft was unusual. I mean, let's annoy Aaron Rodgers. It would seem to be what. Let's not give him any receivers and let's draft your replacement. Let's, you know, let's do repeat what we did 15 years ago with Favre. Very, very strange. And that 13-3, they weren't a 13-3 team. You know, they were what, 11-5 team. They got lucky in a couple. You know.
Yes, there were a lot of instances you could point to where he said, should they really, even the game against the Vikings, like, should he really have won that game? If they hand off to Dalvin Cook, they probably don't win that game. And if Kirk doesn't decide to throw it, you know, into the back of the end zone for an interception, then you probably come away with a huge blown lead for the Green Bay Packers in that game rather than a win. And they got a bunch of other breaks along the way. So they didn't have a lot of the, the statistical points that you would see from other 13-3 teams in terms of their point differential, how much they beat teams by, things like that. The quality of their wins was not super impressive, but you mentioned that they have the kryptonite. They have exactly what hurts the Vikings the most, which is Za'Darius Smith and Kenny Clark and Preston Smith. And those three guys, they won both games for the Packers last year. So you can't just say, oh, well, the Vikings, you know, can beat them out. Do you have the Vikings as the division winner, though? Because I think it's a hard question.
I'm not sure that I do. Okay, so it starts off with hopefully a week one win. Then they'll play the Colts, who are the Xavier Rhodes game. The Colts are
the Xavier Rhodes.
I really like Frank Reich, but the Colts have made some really surprising signings. So let's all things being well, 2-0. Now the Titans impressed me last year, so I think that's a loss, I'm afraid to say. Oh, then lovely old Bill O'Brien gifts the Vikings a win. That's 3-1.
Deshaun Watson is still their quarterback, even if he was not given any help. I'm just saying.
He is, but Bill O'Brien is still their head coach. And the idiocy of that man outweighs the genius of the other. Seahawks, that's a loss, I'm afraid. Falcons,
I love that you just decided to start picking the schedule. That is a consistent bit on the show, as you know. So what have you got them at now, since we're doing this?
I've got 4-2. They always beat Atlanta, so apart from when it matters. Packers after the bye. I think that's a loss. 4-3. Home to Detroit, 5-3. At Chicago Bears, 5-4. Oh, the Everson Griffin game.
Chicago.
Sorry?
You can't ever win at Chicago. It's just like you can never put a W there. If they do it, I mean, it's not impossible, but
Case Keenum did.
Yeah, he did. But he got a little help from Mitch Trubisky in that one.
Certainly did. I think 5-5, lost to the Cowboys. Oh, and then there's Bridgewater. Week 12 comes back to town. This is an emotional season for Mike Zimmer. All these old favorites coming back to him. Carolina, McCaffrey. I think Carolina are going to win that. I've lost where I am. Am I 5-6?
You should be at Jacksonville at 5-6. So, this is one of my favorite games to talk about already is the game against Carolina, because it's just like classic Vikings to lose to Teddy Bridgewater. They get rid of him because they think his knee doesn't work anymore and that he'll never recover. And then he does, and he comes back and beats you. It just has,
isn't it?
This is one thing that you are a master of. Like, you have such great command of the Minnesota Viking way of looking at everything. And I respect that.
Well, the Carolina Panthers seem to be the Vikings reserve team, don't they? The Norv Turner, the Jarius Wright, the Captain Munlin, who was arrested for writing bad checks. But this
I need to see it. It does happen.
There's countless former Vikings that seem to join the Panthers. I've lost where I am.
You're 5-6 against Jacksonville, which has got to be a win.
That's a win, yeah. Oh, and then it's Brady. Bloody. That's a loss. So, and then the Bears at home, they might win that. Oh God, it's New Orleans. What? So it's basically 7-9, isn't it? I'm thinking something like that.
There have been a lot of different opinions on where this will end up. Our friends at Pro Football Focus, who you are well aware of, they have it more in the 7-9 type of range. But others, Courtney Cronin, Bill Barnwell, who was on the show, thinking more in the 10-6 range, in part because the division, well, interesting, is not super compelling. Like, not if good. You were in the NFC South or if the NFC West, you might be looking
at
and say, right, yeah, that you would be looking at 7-9. But can you beat Nick Foles? Probably with the Bears, not so much with the Eagles, but with the Bears, you can. Can you beat Detroit? They usually do.
Right, I've been harsh, so let's up it. Let's go 8-8.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's now split the Lions games.
The part about going 8-8 this year is that they are going to let 7 teams into the playoffs now. So you could go 8-8 and end up making the playoffs.
What a terrible decision that is. Yes, I'd forgotten about that.
Awful. I mean, I like more football, So it's going to have, we're going to have more football.
But it lowers the quality. It lowers, just keep it as it is. They did it with soccer in the European Championships. There was 16 teams and then it went up to 24 and it's never been as good.
Yeah, and the 2018 Vikings that went 8-7-1 would have made the playoffs in the current system, which that was not particularly a playoff team. So you've got them in 8-8.
It was their year.
I won't have you pick the other team schedules, but 8-8 puts them where? You think it puts them second, third in the division?
Second or third? Yeah, I mean, the Bears aren't any good. I mean, they are, but they've got a hopeless quarterback and a coach who is McVay light, isn't he? And we've all seen what happened to McVay.
Yeah, you could say that, or a wannabe Andy Reid, or I don't know. I mean, I wonder how much is the coach and how much is the quarterback, because if you gave...
But if you've got both of them, you're screwed, so...
Right, yeah. If you gave Bill Walsh Mitch Trubisky, it just wouldn't matter because he can't throw accurately and is bad at football.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much it is. But I also think that they didn't put Trubisky in the best situations. He had one of the lowest rates of play action in the NFL, which is very weird since play action pumps up every quarterback, including Kirk Cousins. So that's not good coaching to take a bad quarterback and then make his job even harder to straight drop back pass, which our buddy Sage Rosenfels talks about as the hardest thing to do as a quarterback. Uh-huh. Here's another question for you. How did you end up being a Vikings fan?
Okay. So when I went to university in my first year of university, there was a scheme that you could take part in, which was, it was called BUNAC, and you could get a short-term work visa in America. So you paid £400, which would have been, I don't know, probably about $250. And that included your flights out, one night's accommodation in New York, your flights back, and this visa. I went out to Minneapolis and I worked in this company. And we were that unoriginal that we because there were loads of people that would go in like holiday camps and get paid like $3 an hour and get abused by rich American children and go, this was the best time ever, cooking marshmallows for absolute, not a chance in hell I'm going to do that. So we ended up working for this company called Skyway Event Services, and they paid us sod all money. We lasted a day because I nearly died. It was dismantling a marquee, and there's a big metal structure in the marquee, six of them, and the fifth one slipped. Everyone got out of the way, and it landed on the stake with me underneath it. And we said, we're not doing this anymore. So then we ended up working downtown in Minneapolis for Rust Consulting, informing people who had been lit. It was a class action lawsuit, and we were talking to loads of people from Alabama and Louisiana, and they couldn't understand us and we couldn't understand them on the phone. But it was working 10 to 6 for $14.50 an hour, which was a hell of a lot of money when your rent was $150 a month.
Yeah,
great.
How long did this go on for? How long did you do that?
It was May until September.
And so you picked up being a Vikings fan then?
Yeah. I sort of became friends with a group of friends who I'm still friends with to this day. I'm just going to say the word friends a lot.
Yeah, that's okay. It's a good show in America.
And yeah. And I came back. When was it? I've been more times than I could possibly. And they've come here. My first game was a 2003 preseason game against the Cleveland Browns. There you go.
Yeah.
And I've stuck it out since then.
How about that?
And then there you go. That's the long version.
And you got to see them in a majestic game against DeShone Kizer in 2017, which was I'm sure you're always your dream. And the Browns, I mean, full circle.
Yeah, it is. And I think I've said before that's what really screwed up that year, because Everson Griffin
tried
playing.
Yeah, that's right. Why he was out there on the last play of the game, I don't know. I love that I asked. I'm so glad that I asked, because that was a lot in that story of how you became a Vikings fan. I never knew. Yeah. We met in 2016 when you came over to write something for, I want to say, Pro Football Focus magazine, which probably doesn't exist anymore.
It didn't last very long, yeah. And then and also Gridiron, a UK magazine, which is still going, neither of which I still write for. But yeah, that was it was pretty much, it wasn't 4 years ago to the day, but 4 weeks and three, anyway, almost 4 years ago, yeah.
Well, Peter, it's always great to catch up with you. You can follow him on Twitter at Peter Carline if you're interested in things happening in England and the occasional Vikings tweet.
Basically it, yeah.
Yeah, basically. All right, so we'll catch up again throughout the season, and we will get your very reasoned takes and often self-deprecating takes on what's going on with the Vikings. So appreciate you all listening to whatever just happened there on Purple Insider.
Hi, my name is Bobby Peters, and I've recently written a book titled The 2017 New England Patriots Pass Game Manual. If you've ever wondered what makes the New England Patriots offense, specifically their pass game, so successful over the years, this book is for you. The book breaks down in detail the schemes the Patriots use by concept. Each concept is broken down into its different variations, its statistical usage based on down and distance, and the important coaching points for how each route is run and how the quarterback reads the play. The book is available now on Amazon. Get your copy today.
Did somebody say playoffs? NBA and NHL are playing for the gold, and our partners at BetOnline have you covered. Get in on all the action, including a new NBA bracket contest with plenty of chances to win. MLB season is pushing into the fall. There's no shortage of ways to bet on hundreds of odds, futures, and props there. So take advantage of the return to sports, and remember, the casino never closes. Check it out all day, all night. Go to betonline.ag. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your welcome bonus. That's betonline.ag, code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.